Today we're dealing with John chapter 20, verses 19 to 31. This is the end of the resurrection chapter in John chapter 20. And it could well be, there is evidence in manuscripts, that perhaps an early edition of St. John ended with 20 verse 31, and that 21 was added later by John himself, probably. And there's at least one manuscript which would not have enough room for chapter 21. The end of it is missing. So there is some evidence that we have maybe two versions here. So in chapter 20, we have on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene, this is in verse 1, Mary Magdalene early in the morning going to the tomb. We have the story of Peter and the beloved disciple going. We have the story of Mary standing outside, following from verses 11 and following. And by the way, I'd just like to mention here that in verse 12, this is striking. It's not in our pericope, but this is striking. It says, she beholds two angels sitting in white, one toward, facing toward the head, and one toward the feet, where the body was lying. Now, this is all placed in the present, so you'd say she saw where the body had been lying. But if you think of the angels facing the feet and the head, you actually get the image of the Ark of the Covenant. And I wonder if that is intended to be elicited here, so that you have the place, the Kaporeth, the mercy seat of God, where the satisfaction for sins takes place, and where God and man, so to speak, meet. And it is at that place where we have, you might say, the body of Jesus. Now, the body of Jesus is not there anymore, but it is the place where satisfaction for sins does take place. Let's take a look then, starting in verse 19. It says, it starts with a genitive absolute, ousseis opsias, therefore, or then, the un. John often has this un used where it's almost like then. When it was, as it was late, on the first day, on that first day, ekaine, of the week, sabbaton in the plural is often week. And now another genitive absolute. And ton theron keklaismenon. And the doors were in a shut condition. So keklaismeno, perfect passive participle in the genitive, because it is the verb of a genitive absolute. Ton theron being the subject of the GA's verb. So the doors being in a shut condition where the disciples were on account of the fear of the Jews. Now, by the way, that's an interesting, the phrase, the fear of the Jews, is a really good example of a so-called objective genitive. That is to say, they were fearing the Jews. It's not that the Jews were afraid. That would be a subjective genitive. Like if you said the fear of the little children, meaning the little children were afraid. Here you have fear, they were fearing the Jews. Objective genitive. So while all this, as it was late, while the doors were in a shut condition, notice perfect passive participle, shut condition, Jesus came and este stood, there's our required verb of histemi, there's one in every pericope, A third, singular, aorist, indicative, active of histemi, strong aorist, though, and intransitive. Jesus came and stood, note, into the middle. He stood in the middle, but in order to stand in the middle, he had to actually get into the middle. So this ice, the grammars will say something like, ice means the same as N. Well, maybe, but generally speaking, when it means N, I shouldn't say it, people say it means the same as N, but it can pinch hit for it, so to speak. But it never does exactly. It's always something like this, in, but you had to move from outside into the middle. So he stood in the middle and says to them, now notice the move to the present tense. That move to the present tense is a move to vividness. Peace to you. And having said this, upon saying this, ipon, aorist, active participle, masculine, singular, nominative, he showed the hands and the side to them. Now, notice that we will normally translate that he showed his hands and side to them, but body parts of a person's own are generally done just with the article. My teacher used to say it's the possessive use of the article. So it's not like the hands and the side were something he got out of a saddlebag someplace and it was a specimen. It's his. He showed his hands and his side to them. Echare san un hoi mathetai idantes ton kurion. Therefore, or then, the disciples rejoiced, having seen the Lord, or upon seeing the Lord. You could maybe even say, because they had seen the Lord. Echareson is from Chairo. It is technically a sixth principal part, a strong sixth principal part without a theta in it. It's not echar theson, but just echareson, and it's intransitive. They rejoiced upon seeing the Lord. 21. Therefore, or then, he said to them, Jesus did, subject after the verb. This is kind of Semitic word order. He said to them again, peace to you. Peace be to you. Or, you know, with both of those, at the end of 19 and here in 21, the assumed verb is a verb to be, but is it the indicative, there is peace with you, or let there be peace to you? Well, because it's the Lord, his bestowing the peace would actually wind up with there being actual peace. Just as ap estale kenme, just as the Father, now it's the same possessive thing, my Father, I think is appropriate, has sent me, kago, kai ego, krasis, as the two words come together. Also, I am sending you. Now, a couple of comments here. First, note the change of the verb from apostello to pempo. Now, this apparently bothered some of the manuscripts, and you'll notice that there is actually a variant reading here, with the first corrector of Aleph, D, L, and a few others, and they say apostello. Just as the Father or my Father has sent me, just so I am apostelloing you. But John loves to do synonyms. And this is probably one of these cases where it's simply a matter of a synonym. In this case, it's apostello, kind of a little bit more specific word, such as sending with a commission, and pempel being a little bit more general, higher on the taxonomic scale, I am sending you. Note also that there is a variant there that is in a couple of the manuscripts, including the original hand of Aleph, Pempso, I will send you. I would draw your attention to Ap Estal Ken, just as my father has sent me, and I'm now here. Perfect tense. You could understand that as equivalent to an aorist, but it's probably really perfect. He has sent me, and I am here. 22. And upon saying this, ipone, there we got another ipone again. Having said this, en ephesesen, he breathed in them and says to them, get Holy Ghost. Get the Holy Spirit. Now, the general use in Greek is when you have something very important, sometimes you leave the articles off completely rather than using them. So the Holy Spirit is actually quite likely as the translation of that. There's an interesting parallel to that in chapter 17 of Acts, verse 23, to the business of where, you know, Paul is at the Areopagus, and he sees in Athens this this statue to the unknown God. Now, it's worded as agnosto theo, an unknown God, but it's probably the same principle, to the unknown God. If you take a look at the ESV, the ESV now translates that as the unknown God, whereas previous editions, including the RSV, say to an unknown God. I argued strongly for that with the translators, and they took my recommendation on that. So we can say here, get, receive the Holy Spirit. Lambano is get in this very general sense, and if it's, what shall I say, if it is in a passive context, you can translate it as receive, but it doesn't mean technically receive. Now, it's important also for sermonic purposes, if you're preaching on this part of the text. Take a look at the side margin references in your Nestle Allen text, opposite en ephesesen from emphysao, breathe, breathe in. And there's a couple of really important side margin references, Genesis 2:7 and Ezekiel 37:9. So you have in Genesis 2, breathing into his nostrils the breath of life for Adam. And Ezekiel 37 is breathing life and the Spirit breathing life into the dead bones. This is that vision of the valley of the dry bones. I think this is an even more important passage than Genesis. So, breathing into the deadness of the people of God who are without hope. In Ezekiel, they're in exile, and you see actually the in Ezekiel 37 now, the dead, so to speak, come to life. It is a metaphor for the people being returned to the land and to their full status as the people of God. Now, that business of the dead coming alive again from Ezekiel 37, I think you can see in Matthew 27, in the Passion account, particularly verse 53, when the dead come out of the tombs. So these were the dead saints. So you have in Ezekiel 37 a metaphor for the people of God being reconstituted as the full people of God, but that's done metaphorically through the image of dry bones coming back to life. And then, as happens so often in the New Testament, the metaphor becomes literally the case. Just like David or Solomon is the Son of God metaphorically, and Jesus is the Son of God in actual fact. So we have that in chapter 27, verse 53 of Matthew. But now, with in this passage, we have something very similar. So in John 20, verse 22, we have here this breathing of life into the deadness of the people of God and restoring them, I guess you would say, to the fullness of there being God's people who can fully stand before Him in righteousness and in holiness. It's a very nice connection there that you can see again literally the passage from Ezekiel coming to pass. And as I emphasized in Ezekiel 37, the Spirit of God is the thing that does this. Then in verse 23 of chapter 20, it goes on. Now, here you have to get the mental pony out of your head if you're a King James guy. And if you're a King Jameser, you remember this kind of translation. Whosoever's sin you forgive, they are forgiven. And whosoever you retain, they are retained. In fact, that on is probably a variant of eon, if, because whoever would not be on tinon, it would have to have a form of hos, like on untone. So it's if you forgive the sins of some people, we can say anybody, but let's say some people, they are in a forgiven condition to them. Aphaontai is a kind of an oddball perfect of aphiemi, and aphete, which occurs right before it, is a second person plural, aorist subjunctive active of aphiemi, and aphaontai, with sort of an augment and a double lengthening there, is a perfect indicative passive, in this case, a third person plural. They are forgiven to them. And then it goes on, eon, if of someone you hold on, kratete, they are held on to, kekratentai. Now look at that form from krateo, to hold on or grasp. That's a perfect passive. That eta before the nu does not mean subjunctive. That's the epsilon from krateo going to a, like krateso, ekratesa, kekrateka, kekratemai. So they are held on to. Now I'd like to alert you all to an interesting interpretation I heard recently. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I just want to alert you to it. And that is lady scholar that I know had the interesting insight that in that last part, we tend to go, if you hold on to the sins of any, they are held on to. But she observed that in Hebrews 4:14, krateo is also used. And it is used with holding on to the confession. Kratomen, let us hold on. Kratomen, let us hold on to the confession. So krateo plus the genitive means to hold fast. And she hypothesized that perhaps that tinon is not to be understood as like the possessive with sins being inserted there mentally, the sins of anybody, but she took it as the direct object of kratete. If you hold on to anybody, they are held on to, with the idea being that if you hold the people close into the community of the faithful, then they are really incorporated into the community of the faithful. I bring this up not because I'm suggesting that we need to go in that direction, but because you have to realize that our traditional rendering, if you forgive the sins of any, they are forgiven to them. And then when we go on and say, if you retain or hold on to the sins of some, that's not actually there in the text. We're filling that in. And then the they are held on to, we're assuming is the sins there, but that kekratein tie does not actually have any subject expressed. So it's an interesting sort of issue grammatically. Now we go 24 through 29. Tomas de and Thomas, one of the 12, the one regularly called Didymus, this is Lego being used of you say or name somebody something. He was not with them when, hote means when, Jesus came. Therefore, or then, they were saying to him, who? The other disciples. He orakamen tun kurion, we have seen the Lord. Now note, there is a syndeton there. There's no binding word like he orakamen de or something like that. So it's a pretty direct sort of statement. He orakamen, first person plural, perfect indicative active of horao. It's got that sort of double augmenty thing going on at the front. It's got the epsilon and the omega. So the omicron of horao lengthened to omega, and then they put an epsilon as a kind of a double reduplication on it. If you let your eye go up to verse 23, to aphaeontai, it's a similar kind of move that was being made. Hode, I'm back in 25, hode now switches the subject. It's the subject, of course, is between Thomas and the 11. Well, it'd be the 10. Hode, and he said to them, e'an me ido, if I do not see. Ido is the aorist subjunctive active of I done, to see. If I do not see in his hands the tupon, the mark of the nails, halon is nails, halos, hohalos is a nail, and now you're assuming, if I do not balo, first singular, aorist subjunctive active, put or place, balo you know as throw, but it also has a kind of a milder meaning like put or place, such as when they say that a guy was beble menon on a pallet, a crippled man. That doesn't mean he was thrown on a pallet like they whipped him down onto it, but placed on a pallet. And if I do not place my finger into the mark of the nails, and if I do not place my hand into his side, ou me pistoiso, I shall surely not believe. First singular, aorist subjunctive active, ou me plus the aorist subjunctive is an emphatic denial. Now, I want you to notice a couple of things in this. Notice that Thomas uses the possessive pronoun, the pronoun in the genitive, sorry. The pronoun in the genitive, personal pronoun, mu, to show possession, of his own body parts. Place my finger and place my hand into his side. Now remember what I said up above in verse 20, where it says, he showed him the hands and the side. Remember I said the article is normally possessive when you're talking about your own body. So you don't need the personal pronoun or, in this case, the genitive of This is the genitive of the personal pronoun or the possessive pronoun. So we have to take these moos as emphatic. So it should be, if I do not place my finger into the mark of the nails and place my hand into his side, I shall surely not believe. 26. And after 8 days, octo, again, they were inside, who were his disciples, and Thomas with them, he was with them. Now, note the move to the present tense. Move to the present tense highlights, foregrounds what you're talking about. So it's like a guy with his voice doing the following. Jesus comes. So, Jesus comes. And now notice again, there's no chi, no de, no un, no binder. That heightens the tension of the scene. Jesus comes, and now we've got that genitive absolute that parallels the GA at the beginning of verse 19, second line. Ton, theron, keklaismenon. Keklaismenon, perfect passive participle of the GA. While the doors were in a shut condition. Well, if you're going to say Jesus comes, then you have to say while the doors are in a shut condition. And este, and he stood into the midst and said, notice our form, este again, our obligatory form of histemi in every pericope. The aorist, indicative, active, third singular. He stood in the midst and said, peace to you. Either let there be peace to you or there is peace to you. And again, like I say, I believe if you're dealing with the Lord, him bestowing the peace means there is peace with you. Then, aita, now note there's a binding word there. Then he says to Thomas, note he says, not said, bring Pharaoh, bring your dactylon, your finger here, and see my hands. And Pharaoh, bring your hand and put it into my side. Now, note there those that emphatic stuff here. See my hands and put your hand into my side. Now, we've got two imperatives there. There are four imperatives. Let's parse those. Phara, ide, phara, bale. Phara and phara are both present imperatives, active, second person singular, second singular. Pharaoh, and you'll remember the principal parts are pharaoh, oiso, enenkon, an odd verb. Enenke is not the usual imperative, remember, for a specific situation like this. Normally an aorist imperative is used. Pharaoh is one of a handful, about a dozen verbs, maybe a little less than that, where the present imperative is preferred because it's just an easier form. The other notable example is ago, age, rather than agage. Now let's look at the other two imperatives, ide and bale. These are both strong aorists. They are so-called aorist, active, imperative, second person singular. See my hands and put into my side. Note that when he says put it into my side, he doesn't have a word for it because chaira, the hand, is doing double duty here for the two verbs. Kai me ginu apistas ala pistas. And do not be, me ginu. Ginu is a present imperative middle of ginomai, second person singular. The u ending is there because it's middle as opposed to the e ending, which is the active ending as in phara. And do not be apistos, unbelieving, but pistos, believing. Faithful or believing. I think it's the adjective of what a pistoio person does, and he is a pistus person. Note the interesting accent on apistus. It is a recessive accent. That's always the case with an alpha privative. This is an alpha privative. The alpha on the front of pistus makes it negative, not believing. Now, I also like to comment on the form ginu. Ginu is from ginamai, and the normal, you might expect the verb to be, if you look at the variant reading, it's the first variant at the foot of the page here for verse 27. Isthi from manuscript D. Isthi would be the second person singular present imperative of the verb to be. Be. However, ginu is, again, not exactly the same as isthi. Because when ginamai means be, the equivalent of be, not become, I think it almost always has the meaning of prove to be, show yourself to be. So do this and do not show yourself to be or prove to be apistus, but prove to be pistus. Apekrithe Tomas. Ooh, a syndeton again. No binder. Therefore, we have some kind of emphasis. This maintains the tension of the scene. Thomas replied and said to him, Ha curious mu kai ha theos mu. My Lord and my God. There are no, as far as I know, there are no variants to these words. Now, notice here there are no variants indicated in the Nestle-Aland text, but I also believe that even in the Swanson edition of the horizontal line versions of this, there are no variants here. There might be spelling variants or something, but there are no variants. My Lord and my God. 29. Jesus says to him, note, present tense, highlights it, a syndeton, there's no binding word, so these incidents are going boom, 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 one after another. Jesus says to him, and now you've got an interesting textual problem. Is the hoti a word meaning because, or is it introducing direct discourse? So I'm going to give you two translations here. Is it this? Because you have seen me, have you believed? Now, I could take it, even with the because, in a second way, as a statement. I mean, please remember that semicolon after pepistoikos is only an editorial comment. All of the punctuation is negotiable. So, you could just be a statement. Because you have seen me, you have believed. In fact, if you want to take it with hoti meaning because, I think that's better. Because you have seen me, you have believed, period. However, let's try it without the hoti. In this case, hoti is simply introducing direct discourse. So it goes like this then. Jesus says to him, comma, quotation marks, you have seen me. You have believed. Just like that. Ba-boom. Ba-boom. I think it's appropriate within this context. Heorakos and pepistoikos are both perfect active indicatives, second person singular referring to Thomas. Makareoi, a syndeton once again. Blessed are the not having believed folks. Having seen folks, sorry, and having believed folks. Blessed are the ones who have not seen, notice may negates it, and have believed. Now, what is really ironic about this passage, and I leave it to those listening to know what they would like to do with this sermonically. What's really ironic about this passage is Jesus is properly commending those who do not have the actual physical experience of feeling his hands and his side and seeing him visually with their eyes. And properly so, as I say. But what's interesting is those who are blessed in being this way can only achieve such faith on the basis of the testimony of the people who did see him and feel him. So in other words, while they may be more blessed, they actually are reliant upon the ones who did see and who did, as a result, believe. Now, if you'll take a look back toward the end of the New Testament, toward 1 John chapter 1, you're going to see this played out. And this is in 1 John page 615 of the, well, of my version at least, of the Nestle Allen text. It's 1 John 1, verse 1. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyeballs, heorakamen, notice that same verb, which we beheld, and our hands, epsilaphason, handled concerning the word of life. Now, John's using this as his testimony. Jump down to verse 3. That which we have seen and have heard, we announce to you in order that also you may have fellowship with us, and our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. So the ones who have the full-blown, what would you say, experience, I guess, the full-blown experience are the ones who are the basis for those who are blessed because they have not seen and have believed. Finally, verses 30 and 31. Menun starts a new section. Many and other, Allah. Allah is other, not Allah, meaning but. Many and other signs Jesus did before, that is to mean in the presence of, his disciples, ha, which, referring to the signs, relative pronoun, are not written. Do not stand written. Gegramena, perfect passive participle from grapho. Are written, which are not in a written condition in this book. But de, tauta. Now note how 30 and 31 each have those binding words, right? Menun and de, but as I was trying to point out to you from verses 26 onward, all of a sudden, except for ita in verse 27, all these binding words begin to disappear. So Thomas answers, Jesus says, Jesus comes into their midst. Well, that's the tension-filled narrative stuff. Now when we get to what? Discourse. All of a sudden the binding words come back in. These things are written, stand written, gegraptai, are in a written condition, in order that pistoisete, you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and in order that believing, you may have life in his name. Now, a couple of forms to parse. Pistoisete, as it is here, is an aorist, active, subjunctive, second plural, but you'll notice that sigma, the second sigma, is bracketed, and a number of very good manuscripts have pistoiete, which frankly I think is the better reading. These things are written in order that you may come to believe, or truly believe. Present subjunctive, so-called, versus aorist subjunctive, so-called, is the difference between focusing on connection and focusing on the action, and I think we want to focus on connection here, in order that you may truly believe, that you may begin to believe, in order that you may always believe, something along those lines. And then you could take, after the huti clause, you could take it as the Christ, the Son of God, is Jesus. You can invert those. because the Christ, the Son of God, has the article, which normally indicates the subject, that the Christ, the Son of God, is Jesus, the anointed one, the Son of God, is Jesus. And in order that believing, hina takes the subjunctive in both of these clauses, hina pistoi eite and hina echete, and in order that believing you may have life in his name. This is a fantastic statement of the purpose of the Gospel of John and why it is a cornerstone book in the New Testament and one of the only four canonical Gospels.